The DarkSide ransomware group goes offline, the Apple Find My network could be exploited, and your Wi-Fi devices are vulnerable to hacks. All that coming up now on ThreatWire. Greetings, I am Shannon Morrison. This is ThreatWire for May 18th, 2021. This is your weekly summary of the threats to our security, privacy, and internet freedom. We have a whole bunch of hacks and all sorts of information happening this week, so let's get right into it. On to the news. I have got several updates to the Colonial Pipeline shutdown the East Coast experienced last week, as well as the DarkSide ransomware group who was behind the attack. And this time it was not an alleged culprit. They actually straight up told everybody that they did it. At the time, I suspected that this would put them in government agencies' crosshairs, and it turns out that may have been correct. As of Friday, the ransomware group appears to have lost access to their servers and their cryptocurrency disappeared from their crypto wallet, and it was transferred to an unknown wallet. This news surfaced by a post by UNKN of another ransomware group called Revil, wherein a member of DarkSide stated that they'd lost access to the public part of their infrastructure, including their blog, payment server, and denial of service servers, leaving them unavailable via SSH, with a note saying hosting support does not provide any other information other than, quote, at the request of law enforcement agencies. Now, it is possible that DarkSide is using this news as a ploy to exit out of ransomware game and then take their money and run. Either of those are pretty plausible reasons for the sudden shutdown, but if it was indeed due to law enforcement, we will likely see a press release from one of the agencies involved in due time. Bleeping Computer noted that the DarkSide Tor server was still up and running, possibly to give victims a way to access their decryption keys in the event their own networks were hit with DarkSide ransomware. The blockchain analytics company called Elliptic shared that the DarkSide group made $3.2 million or 75 Bitcoin from the pipeline hack on May 8th. Then the wallet was emptied on May 13th of $5 million in Bitcoin. So in total, DarkSide got 57 payments for $17.5 million total from 21 different wallets in the time that they were active. 18% of the total Bitcoin in the wallet was sent to exchanges, 4% of that was going to Hydra, which is a darknet marketplace. And now we know that the Colonial Pipeline did indeed pay a ransom. They also resumed normal operations as of May 15th. So if you were freaking out about gas, there was really no reason to do so. So thank you so much for creating a panic. The intelligence firm Intel 471 also noted via a blog post that ransomware operations will have to wash the cryptocurrency they earn from ransoms in new ways since the cryptocurrency mixing service called BitMix, which was also used by many ransomware groups, allegedly ceased operations as well. FireEye also did some digging into DarkSide and discovered some of their affiliates. Those are the customers that pay to have access to the DarkSide ransomware, and they get a fancy GUI to track and manage their victims. Of the five affiliates that FireEye discovered, they also explain how three of them work and use DarkSide ransomware, and those are titled as UNC2628, UNC2659, and UNC2465. So even with DarkSide seemingly taken offline, however it happened, ransomware continues to be a very major threat, and it seems to be growing with no intent of slowing down anytime soon. Find My, which is Apple's super handy tool that can help you find your lost iOS or macOS devices, has a security vulnerability. Positive security researcher Fabian Braunlein is credited for finding and developing a proof of concept called SendMy, showing this problem in action. In it, they show that, quote, it is possible to upload arbitrary data from non-internet connected devices by sending Find My BLE broadcasts to nearby Apple devices that then upload the data for you. Given the use case, the researcher also noted that Apple is unlikely to be able able to prevent this. They used a microcontroller and a custom-designed macOS app based off of the open-source OpenHaystack that broadcasts data using BLE or Bluetooth Low Energy. The receiving device would forward any data received once connected to an internet connection onto an attacker's iCloud server. Now, this attack could potentially be used to make people exceed their data plan, or this is the cool one, it could be used to exfiltrate data from shielded sites whenever those sites are visited by people with iPhones. Exceeding a data plan would take a while, though. This exploit only uses a few bytes each time. But stealing information from air-gapped sites, that could be an issue. Braunlein used research that was done by a team at the Technical University of Darmstadt in Germany and some inspiration from AirTags to come up with the proof of concept. It's sort of like emulated two different AirTags. Since they are used to broadcast BLE data that is then picked up by nearby devices, which then forward that data over to Apple's servers where the data can later be retrieved, this technique could also be abused by an attacker. Braunlein used an ESP32 microcontroller as a modem, broadcasting a hard-coded message. They then listened on a serial interface for new data to broadcast in a loop until something was eventually received. Any nearby Apple devices that have Find My enabled would potentially pick up those signals and send them along to Apple's servers. Braunlein can then retrieve that data using their custom app, which was based on the university's research. So TLDR, somebody could encode a message in a broadcasted payload and fetch that data on the other end. Since the Find My offline packets of data are already encrypted, additional steps to protect this feature would need to be added to add authentication to the BLE broadcast and apply rate limits on location report retrievals. Any Finder devices can't differentiate between a real AirTag or a clone, so AirTags can be spoofed. Authenticating those BLE advertisements would also be hard to accomplish, though, since the size of the broadcast does not allow for additional data and the keys rotate. For rate limiting, according to Braunlein, Apple could cache the requested key IDs to ensure that only 16 new key IDs, because 16 is the max AirTags allowed per Apple ID, apparently, are queried per 15 minutes, an Apple ID. Although somebody could still cycle through free Apple IDs to bypass this as well. This probably does not pose much of a threat to most users, but it's really cool nonetheless, and it adds to the potential issues related to AirTags. I want to give a big shout out to my Hush Puppy Perk Level patrons for sharing these brand new fur baby photos and for the support. It's always fun. And a quick shout out to Python Pirate and Super Average for joining the ThreatWire Alliance and as always for supporting the show. Patreon exclusive merch has just been unlocked as a new perk for the ThreatWire Alliance. So now's a great time to join the team if you have not already. Also, if you sign up for this month for one of those tiers that includes the merchandise, you will automatically qualify for the first round of designs. All you have to do is make sure that you have an address filled out on Patreon so I can send you merchandise. It's super easy. Check the Patreon page for more details and on to the third news story. Props to Justin over on Patreon for sending this story my way. A series of medium security Wi-Fi vulnerabilities were found and disclosed by security researcher Matthew Van Hoff, which affect basically any device that uses Wi-Fi, including routers, IoT devices, and more. The attacks, which are dubbed under the name FRAG attacks, which is short for fragmentation and aggregation attacks, all have CVEs and they range in severity between 4.8 to 6.5. An attacker would need to be within Wi-Fi range to exploit any of these vulnerabilities. So they could steal user information or attack devices on a Wi-Fi network if they were able to. Three of these issues are within the Wi-Fi standard itself, which in turn means that they affect most devices that use Wi-Fi. Several others were found due to widespread programming problems in devices, and these issues also affect the newest WPA3 security protocol, along with WEP, W-E-P, which means that they have been around since Wi-Fi was first a thing, back in 1997. Yes. The researcher suspects that they were never found through this very long amount of time because the process of finding and exploiting these issues is fairly complicated. They found that the flaws can allow for plain text frame injection, oftentimes which look like just regular handshakes between devices. Another flaw allows an attacker to exfiltrate data due to how Wi-Fi frames are fragmented and reassembled. These are medium severity because they would be hard to abuse. A user would need to interact or use uncommon network settings for an attacker to be successful. The programming mistakes, though, are trivial to exploit, so these end up being the biggest issue. The researcher worked with vendors on a 9-month-long coordinated disclosure supervised by both the Wi-Fi Alliance and ICASI. Both Microsoft and Linux are shipping patches. Cisco and Juniper are also pushing patches for some of their networking equipment as well, although some patches just will never come. Some products will never be updated. That's great. Users that don't have updates available for their devices can still mitigate some of the attacks by using HTTPS and making sure that devices receive any other available updates as they come. Configure DNS so it cannot be poisoned, disable fragmentation, and disable pairwise or group rekeys. The researcher noted that they have no reason to believe that these were ever exploited in the wild. This week on Morse Code, I am demoing some really cool PowerShell and command line tools that you can use whenever you factory reset a PC. It's super useful, so definitely check them out. Subscribe to my channel, which is youtube.com/ShannonMorse, for more of that kind of content. And with that, do not forget to like and subscribe to this channel as well. I'm Shannon Morse, and I will see you on the internet.